Welcome to Unlapped. Good evening from Boston, Massachusetts, and good morning from Kyoto, Japan. Nate Saunders, Lawrence Edmondson are back for another episode of Unlapped. We missed you greatly, gentlemen, last week as we broke things down in between Australia and Suzuka. Tell me all about your travels. How's Japan been treating you? Lawrence, I know you've been actively riding a bike. Is that correct?
That is right. So we both decided to dodge jet lag a little bit by staying out on a similar time zone to Australia rather than going all the way back to London and coming all the way out here. Took advantage of it. Got a motorbike rode from Tokyo down around the Izu Peninsula, which is a weird and wonderful place, and then up to Mount Fuji, which I was really lucky. Beautiful blue skies while I was there. Not quite, because it's cherry blossom season, so it's when the trees start to bloom with the kind of iconic pink sakura flowers, but I didn't quite see that. But we're starting to see a bit of that now in Tokyo, and hopefully in time for the race in Suzuka, which is where we head next, we'll see a bit of that too.
You didn't want to join the motorbike brigade, Nate?
No, I can't ride. I'd have held Lawrence back quite significantly. I can ride a push bike. I can't ride a motorbike. And a push bike, I wouldn't be able to keep up with him. I've been in Japan for the same amount of time. When Lawrence was riding around Tokyo, I was basically just being a tourist in Tokyo, which is an amazing city.
It's your first time, right?
Yeah, it is. Both Australia and Japan were two kind of bucket list races I wanted to cover. And hadn't managed to do them until now. So to do them both back to back was great. And like Lawrence said, you can either fly back or you can stay out here. And I think staying out here just gives you that advantage to do that. Sure. And yeah, the last week, the issue being for us, obviously, is that we've put ourselves onto an even crazier time zone for you guys in terms of doing this podcast. It's just an awesome country. And one of the things I've always seen, because I've always covered this race from the UK, you always see the Suzuka fans are, you know, these incredibly enthusiastic, passionate people with such attention to detail for, you know, the things they bring to drivers and stuff. But actually, you see that across Japan. Everyone's so friendly. There's just such an enthusiasm for like everything in Japanese culture. It's just down to the every detail of it is perfect. And to top it all off, all of their bars are kind of like quirky. Like they've got like, we found it like a Nintendo bar. When we were in Hiroshima yesterday, been traveling with Lawrence and Chris Medland. So been doing some touristy stuff, and then we go down to Suzuka tomorrow morning on their super fast trains that they have here, which, you know, the food has ruined UK sushi for me now, and the trains have ruined UK trains for me, because I mean the UK trains are dreadful anyway, but seeing how the Japanese run them, I think is everyone in the world should come and sit on one of their trains and just see how well they run, and then go home and complain to whoever they need to complain to about trains there. But yeah, it's been awesome. And it's a funny one really, because when you're on the road so much, you do Australia, been away, you know, do this trip, we'll do Japan, and then I was suddenly just surrounding myself. I was like, oh yeah, I fly back to England next week. It's been so long on the road. It's a really nice opportunity to take some time and just see a new part of the world. So yeah, it's been great.
You fly back to London, then you have to come to Miami in the United States, which probably doesn't level up to either of the two places that you guys have recently just visited.
Well, we'll see. But I mean,
Miami's always a fun race.
And we've got Le Tub as well, which is an ESPN favorite out in Hollywood, Miami, which I've been thinking about since the last Miami Grand Prix. It's great. A great spot. So, you know, let's not discount Miami completely.
For those who have no idea what Le Tub is, it's a hole-in-the-wall treehouse, if you will, in northern Miami. And these two gentlemen found that gem. We ate there every night of the week leading up to the Miami Grand Prix. They've got half-pound burgers and peel-and-eat shrimp. That's all you could ask for on the beach.
Yeah. Yeah, perfect. I mean, right there, everyone listening to this who's near Miami should be flocking to Le Tub, having heard that.
You're welcome for the free publicity. On that note, remember, if you're watching us on YouTube, like this video, leave us a comment, and don't forget to subscribe to ESPN for more F1 content. And if you're listening, hit us with a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts. All right, let's preview Suzuka. Obviously, three races in at this point, 4 points separate the top two teams, 11 points separate the top four drivers. Last race presented a decent amount of drama, Laz. Obviously, Max had a DNF due to a brake issue. We know that Red Bull has been very strong in the past in Japan. Are you expecting Max to kind of go scorched earth here? And what are your expectations for him and Red Bull as a whole?
Well, it does feel a bit like Japan last year, where the previous race, Red Bull had messed up and Carlos Sainz won, funnily enough, but it was in Singapore because, of course, the Japanese Grand Prix has moved from October to the spring this year. And so I feel like we'll see a similar level of Max Verstappen determination. He said before last year's Japanese Grand Prix that he wanted to win by 20 seconds. And I think he did it by 19.6 or something. And Christian Horner said the reason the other 0.4 seconds went missing was because of the car not getting out of the way under blue flags on the final lap. So I think we'll see a similar level. And I think we'll see a similar level of competitiveness from the Red Bull at Suzuka, because it is a track which kind of naturally suits all the strengths that we know exist in that car. I mean, that car is strong across the board, but this really feels like a track where it will go quick. But we are still in that early stage of the season where we don't know exactly how the cars are going to stack up. Ferrari's performance in Australia was genuinely impressive. I know everyone's going to look at it and feel like, well, if Max hadn't had the brake failure, then he probably would have run off into the distance. And there may be some truth to that, but there were signs as well that the Ferrari had genuine pace throughout that weekend. Maybe not enough quite to challenge Max Verstappen for victory, but certainly enough to get closer. And of course, if you look at what happened to Perez, you know, got stuck further down the order, didn't really make the progress. And at the first two races, we've seen him finish second behind Max. So I feel like there's certain races where other teams are going to get closer, but I'm not sure Suzuka's going to be one of them.
Okay, to that point, do you think Checo can be a factor here, Nate?
Yeah, and I think this season and this situation, and I agree with Lawrence, you know, that teams are a lot closer this year. One of the things we talked about all of last season, wasn't it, was that it was kind of okay for Perez to be as off the boil and off form as he was, because really he didn't need to be in a position where, you know, there were wins that Red Bull were losing. There may well be situations where that's not the case this season. Everything we've seen from Checo this year has been that he's been in a much better place. I think mentally, I get the impression that he's accepted the fact he's not going to win the championship now. I think that last year, I think he still came into the season thinking this car is the best car I'm ever going to drive. And quite naturally, he kind of thought, I can probably beat Max, especially the way he started the year. And that was quite a crushing blow for him, the way that it quickly fell apart and the fact that he was written off so quickly by everybody. I get the impression now that he's just got to a point where he's happy driving that car. He's happy racing. He knows Max is, you know, he knows the team is built around Max and it should be built around Max. I mean, Max is, you know, the best driver in Formula One right now. And yeah, what we saw last year was when he had a few bad results, the form just completely went away. So I'm hopefully for him, Australia's not, you know, not the beginning of that. Hopefully it's just an anomaly. But yeah, I think that this is actually kind of where Perez really has to step up and prove his worth to that team, because, you know, if reliability does start to become something of an issue for Red Bull, we don't know if it will be or not. You need to have that second driver up there, you know, in the position where if something does happen to Max up ahead, you're not squandering points because yeah, like Lawrence said, you know, Perez was down the order in Australia and Red Bull capitalized. So yeah, I hope so, because, you know, last year it was actually kind of awkward and painful covering Checo, because he's a pretty nice guy to, you know, to talk to. He's always been quite open. And it was similar when Bottas was in that kind of spiral, and similar to when Ricciardo was in that spiral at McLaren. Like, when you see a driver in that and you know previously how good they've been at points, it's just difficult to see that happen, because you can kind of almost see the human side of it, you know, and them doubting themselves. So yeah, from a sporting side, I think we need Perez to be up there, but I've got faith he will be, because he just seems to be in a different place, a better place, you know, in terms of what he expects of himself and what he thinks is possible. And I think that even though he's maybe played down his expectations, he's probably put himself into a more sensible position in terms of what, you know, what he can achieve week to week.
I found it interesting, after just three rounds, Verstappen has 51 points, which is the lowest amount of points for a championship leader since Lewis Hamilton in 2012, when he had 45 points. And Laz, you kind of mentioned this, even when, you know, had Max been able to continue on in the Australian Grand Prix, Ferrari still had incredible pace. And it's kind of like, I want two different things. Like, I loved seeing that Max, loved is a strong word. I enjoyed seeing Max to a degree struggle, because then obviously it paved the way for somebody else to win a Grand Prix, and seeing Carlos Sainz atop the podium was awesome. But at the same time, part of me is like, oh, I wish Max would have been able to continue and didn't have the brake issue, because I really would have loved to have seen if Ferrari had the pace for the full Grand Prix to be able to contend and fight Max. And I think that speaks to just the incredible progress that Ferrari has made from a season ago. And I know we've spent a lot of time talking about Carlos Sainz, and rightfully so. He's had a remarkable start to the season. But Charles Leclerc is just 4 points behind Max Verstappen. Like, how important is it for Charles' championship hopes to have another strong result here in Suzuka Laz?
Massively. I mean, I still feel like championship hopes for Ferrari are a pretty distant thing at this stage. It's, of course, you look at Max's situation and you think, well, you know, he's only got 51 points or whatever it is from the first three races. But yeah, of course, 25 of those essentially just went missing in one go. So yeah, I think you have to kind of put a bit of a reality check on it. But the other thing we say about Ferrari is the performance has definitely improved. There's still a gap to Red Bull, but if you average it out compared to where it was at this stage last year, there's, you know, significant performance. You know, they've almost halved that gap. And the gap was so big to start with that we're still not in the territory of where, you know, personally, I think we can talk about them as championship contenders, but they have made progress. The other thing, which I think has gone a bit unnoticed, or perhaps because it's happened, you know, you don't really talk about it, but a few years ago, if we had a Ferrari 1-2 in a race, you'd be like, right, where's the mistake coming? Where's the pit stop going to be, you know, messed up? Where's the strategy going to go out the window? When's the unfortunate safety car going to come in? And of course, some of that is luck to an extent, but I think a lot of it operationally, they have got nailed down a lot better. And that really speaks to where the whole team is going. So, of course, you need the performance from the car. You know, you can't do anything in Formula One if you haven't got a car that can genuinely compete with the lap times you need to win races. But there's so many other little factors, and it seems like quite a few of those Ferrari are starting to get into place. Again, we're only three races in. You know, they could turn back to, you know, the bad old days coming up. But I honestly don't think they will. I think they've actually made genuine progress there. And a lot of that, I think, you know, you can't credit all of it directly to Fred Vasseur, but he's the guy overseeing it all. And I think he's put in place a structure and a better feeling within the team, a better culture maybe within the team than what was there before. And these things are very slow progress, but it's really encouraging to see that those things have started to change as well as the performance of the car. Mm-hmm. Because when we're looking at Ferrari's genuine chances of winning world championships, I'd like to think, you know, by the end of this year, if they're winning fairly regularly, they could mount a challenge in 2025. But of course, 2026 is a key year for so many teams, because that's when we have regulation change and Ferrari will look to make a big step at that stage. But all these other things have to be in place. So they have to be a super slick, operationally perfect F1 team, where when there is an issue for Red Bull, or when the Red Bull setup isn't quite in the right place, which was the case in Australia, they can put the pressure on. And you only really win those kind of races by putting pressure on the most dominant team. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Ferrari did that throughout the weekend. And I'm not saying that's why Max Verstappen had the brake issue, but yeah, the more pressure you put on, the more mistakes come from the very top teams. And we saw it with Mercedes as well during their period of dominance, that sometimes a team that's dominated for so long forget a little bit what it's like to be in a really tight battle at the front. So my hope is that, yeah, we do see the Ferrari on certain tracks, certain occasions, usually when, the tyres are acting in a similar way to how they did in Australia, they may start to get into the fight and start to put Red Bull under a bit of pressure. Because, you know, I don't mind seeing Max Verstappen win the championship, win races. You know, I think he fully deserves all the successes coming his way. But I just like to see him push harder. I just like to see him have to prove exactly how much talent he has. And we know he can do that because we saw it in 2021 against Lewis Hamilton. But I want to see it again because it's so much more interesting.
Oh, it's so much fun to watch when it's a tightly contested championship, whether that's constructors or drivers. It feels like, even though it's just been a handful of races, that maybe Lewis Hamilton's decision has been proved right. Maybe he knew something that we didn't, Nathaniel.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, I mean, it does seem like Lewis has kind of phoned it in, doesn't it, a little bit? Because I don't think the start of the season, he's been pretty poor. I mean, I think he's got away with it, in the sense of, you think about how we usually talk about drivers that aren't delivering. I don't know whether Lewis is just like, his head's already in 2025, but yeah, that was the big talking point, wasn't it? When Lewis did make that switch, we said, well, what does this mean about where he sees both teams, both projects, etc.? And I think it speaks to exactly what Lawrence just laid out there about the team. The feel around Ferrari is much better. They're clearly doing a lot of things differently. And Mercedes, I just don't know. Like, you don't get a few years ago, the last, 2022 and 2023, the feeling was Mercedes have just made a slight misstep, but it's put them here. As soon as they get it right, they'll be right back on the tail of Red Bull. This year, I don't think anybody's thinking that. I don't think anyone's like, oh, Mercedes are right there, and you know they're just a little step away. Everyone's like, okay, Mercedes are just you know in that group behind now, and you know to fall away like that is pretty significant. So yeah, it's obviously too early to say Mercedes. You know, you never write them off improving through a season. But yeah, I just think Ferrari right now look like such a better package just all round. The weirdest thing to me, then the funniest thing to me, I think Lewis Hamilton is definitely an upgrade on most drivers, you know, in Formula One. Depends which Lewis you're getting. I mean, I'm not sure whether Lewis has just turned his attention elsewhere. You know, there's some people saying maybe Lewis isn't the same driver he was a few years ago, which I think is harsh because he was good last season. But the weirdest thing about all this is that at the moment, it looks like Ferrari have replaced a very, very good driver in Carlos Sainz, their most informed driver in Carlos Sainz, with you know the greatest statistical driver of all time. And I wonder how that dynamic is going to change things going forward, because I think Lewis is going to be a lot more demanding on the team than Carlos may well be. But yeah, he can be very pleased with himself making that decision. Because if you were putting money on either team beating Red Bull, like who the first team to beat Red Bull will be, you go Ferrari. And I don't even think you say Mercedes. I think you put McLaren above Mercedes. Agreed. Right now, just given what we've seen from them from the past kind of 12 months or so. Mercedes, I wouldn't put up there. You might even stick Aston Martin around Mercedes, just given the investment, given the ambition of Lawrence Stroll. And with Mercedes, we've just kind of seen them stagnate. So I think that Lewis, it does feel like he's abandoning ship a little bit. And it's funny, isn't it, how decisions in hindsight always just look so different in Formula One. You know, you can make a decision in January, and then even by April, we're like, yeah, Lewis is a genius. He's, you know, he's made this great decision. By August, we might be saying, what's he doing? Yeah, Mercedes exactly. Is now amazing again. But right now, yeah, in the cold light of day, it does look like, you know, there was a lot of logic behind what he decided to do.
Nate, I don't want to let that slide there. Sorry, Katie, can I jump in? Because it sounded a bit like, Nate, you were saying that you would pick Carlos Sainz over Lewis Hamilton.
Oh, no, no, no.
Is that what you were saying?
No. I was just saying it's interesting that right now, one of the things that's standing out for me about Ferrari is how good Carlos Sainz is performing. And yet that he's moving on. So I think, look, I would pick Lewis over Carlos any day of the week. But I think one of the things that certainly I think, especially in those moments when Red Bull have slipped up, it's been Carlos, not Charles Leclerc, who's jumped into that, you know, and has capitalized. And it's just interesting that he's the guy who's making way now. Not Charles, or not any, you know, not there's like a third driver's seat like there would be in WEC. Lewis, 100% of the time, I would pick over Carlos. But that dynamic of that team and, you know, what Carlos has brought to the table, and given the fact that Lewis is kind of, we've been quite underwhelming this season, it's just quite, that part of it, it's just quite interesting going into next year, because I 100% think Lewis will be back on form. But if you looked at it in the cold light of day right now, you're like, well, is Lewis just washed up at this point? Is he, you know, there's lots of people saying that at the moment, and I don't agree with it. But I just thought it was interesting, you know, Carlos winning in Singapore last year, winning in Australia, and yet he's the guy that doesn't have a race seat yet for next season. And it's probably been one of the standout good points for Ferrari for a little while now, I'd say. And Leclerc's been great as well, but I think he's not stepped up when he's needed to. Maybe I'm not making any sense. So, in my head, I'm making sense. But
you accept
the way Lawrence is looking at me.
That rebuttal, I know he's smirking.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
He's smirking like. No,
I think that's a very fair point. And I think it's a nuanced point. And you're right, it is. And it's clear that the two Ferrari drivers right now have quite different strengths. And which one would you back? because you've got Carlos Sainz, as you say, so consistent, able to pick up race victories, it seems, when Red Bull had the issues. But you have Leclerc's raw pace that sometimes goes awry. Sometimes it doesn't quite materialise. But when it does, it's explosive. It's, you know, it makes Carlos look quite average. So that is a really tricky decision, I agree, for Ferrari. It's too late now because decision's been made. My gut feeling is that it is the right one, that, you know, Lewis and Charles will be a better pairing, say, Lewis and Carlos or Charles and Carlos. But yeah, I think it's an interesting conversation to have. That's why I just wanted to pick it up, because I wanted to clarify exactly which way you were going with that, because it's such an interesting conversation.
Yeah, and you're right too as well. And actually, this is where, you know, the Charles Leclerc conversation is actually quite interesting, because when they made that move, obviously we were talking about how great it is, Lewis is going to Ferrari. But there's always been part of me that has felt that fundamentally that decision to get Lewis in was not exactly, it's never been a ringing endorsement of what Ferrari think about Charles Leclerc, in the sense of, if you thought he's the guy that when you have a car that can deliver, you're like, look, let's go get a Ricciardo or a, I don't know, an Albon, you know, let's go get another talented young driver who we don't have to pay as much money, who'll be competitive and maybe will be on the same level as Charles, but we'll build the team around him. Now, obviously, if Lewis Hamilton is available to you, you probably go after him. It's a bit like Mercedes with Max right now, you know, keeping that door open, etc. But I always saw it as, you know, John Elkann, from what we understand, you know, President Ferrari has said, or sorry, CEO of Ferrari has said, we need a top line driver. We need a superstar driver. And a lot of people would say, well, don't you already have that in Charles Leclerc? And the fact that Ferrari went after Lewis, I think, spoke volumes to the way they viewed both drivers. Maybe that they had two good drivers, but maybe not great drivers, or at least consistently great drivers. So it's interesting that they brought in Lewis. To me, it wasn't exactly a great sign of how they saw Charles Leclerc. And now what we're seeing, to add to that nuanced point that we've been talking about, Carlos seems to be the one who's just in those big moments is getting more out of the car. I think Charles Leclerc is the fantastic driver, but yeah, the question that is growing around him is, when those opportunities present themselves, is he the right person? You know, and does he have the, you know, the right pace, the right temperament, etc., the right coolness under pressure to deliver? And at the moment, he's not. It's Sainz in that car who is the guy to do that.
Okay,
other factor here, sorry, just to kind of one last thing on this, is that with Lewis, you're also getting the commercial power,
yeah, of course,
and like brand recognition that goes around. So I think for Ferrari, it's been a long-term project. Well, John Elkann, has been a very long-term project to try and get Lewis into that seat. And then as soon as it actually could happen, you know, we've heard it so many times, they're courting him, you know, he's thinking about it, stuff like that. And that's why it was almost unbelievable when the story broke, because we've heard so many times that they're going to do it and they haven't quite done it. So I think a lot of that was in place already. So I'm not sure the reason they did it was because they knew that Leclerc wasn't going to do the job. And also, realistically, given the two ages of the two drivers, yeah, Lewis, it was now or never. Like, you know, it really was, I think, you know, he's potentially got a good 3 years there. But after that, I'd say, you know, it's quite likely that Lewis might look to retirement, perhaps earlier, but I'd say, yeah, 3 years. So I think there is a logic beyond just Ferrari need just one driver. That there is a reason why you'd have Leclerc and Hamilton together. And there's so many other reasons beyond what he can do on track why you'd have Hamilton in your team as well.
Take it a step further. If you definitely take Lewis Hamilton over Carlos Sainz for that seat, go back to before they even make that decision of picking Charles Leclerc over Carlos Sainz to continue to ride with him as Lewis Hamilton's teammate. Would you as well do what Ferrari did and stick with Charles Leclerc because of his race pace, because of his skill set, and because of maybe the demeanor personality mix with Lewis Hamilton? Or is it unfair to ask this question 3 races in and Carlos Sainz has been in the form that he's currently been in and we don't know what's going to happen for the rest of the season?
I think the timing
of it. I don't think it's unfair to ask a question because Ferrari made that decision before those first 3 races. So, you know, they did it with even less evidence of what was going on. But now I go back to just Leclerc's raw talent and ability to do things with a car that other drivers can't do. You know, we've seen at times when the Ferrari isn't really, you know, handling as Carlos wants, that Charles can kind of find that extra pace. He can live with cars doing things that maybe Carlos can't. And that's not always a positive thing, because sometimes drivers tend to drive around problems and then teams don't fully address it. underlying issues. But still, I think the combination of Charles and Lewis is really exciting. I mean, to see who's going to turn out on pole position or higher up the grid in those early races is going to be thrilling to watch, because on one hand, you've got the guy with the most pole positions in F1 history. And on the other, you have a guy who, when he's been up against some very high quality teammates, has made a few of them, look, I don't know, it's not really making the others look average, actually. It's more just making himself look exceptional on occasion. So, seeing how that works out will be interesting. And then the big question with Charles, and I think, I'd still like to give him a bit of time with this, is whether he can round off all the other things that maybe he's lacking, build up a bit of that racecraft. But the stat that always gets thrown against Charles is that he's got, I can't remember how many pole positions, but only, whether it's race victories, and it's all out of whack.
Five wins.
Way more poles than five wins. Yeah. So, but the reason for that I see is because he's often qualifying the car on pole position when it has no right to be on pole position. And then in the race, the car is naturally going back to its natural position. So, I'd still have picked Charles Leclerc and Lewis Hamilton as the combination going forward. Maybe come back to me at the end of the season and I might have a different opinion if Carlos continues to build on this form that he showed in Australia, and of course the impressive backstory of coming back from the appendicitis, and the strength and the willpower that took, that is hugely impressive as well. It's always a tricky situation for an F1 team when all of a sudden they get presented with three very good drivers, because there's no such thing as a substitute bench, or you can't, it's not like having a full team of players where you can move players around to bring in others, even if they're slightly out of position. This is a case where you've got two cars and that's it. And you have to make some very difficult and sometimes quite brutal choices.
Would you agree, Nate?
Yes, absolutely. I'm not sure if we'll talk about where Carlos, we will later, what his options are. But the one final thing on this is that I think what it's proved is that the best Carlos Sainz is when he's got a chip on his shoulder. Maybe it's difficult for some people to imagine that, the son of a World Rally champion and, a guy that's, has had a lot of great opportunities in his life could drive with a chip on his shoulder, but his whole career has kind of, he's felt overlooked by Red Bull, by Renault. McLaren didn't really fully back him with a long-term contract. Ferrari didn't either. He just, when he's in this kind of mindset, I think you get the best out of him. So I think any team signing him, they almost have to try. You almost want to sign signs and then give him some reasons internally to have that chip on his shoulder. I don't know how you do that, but he just
ask Michael Jordan. He would just create things. People hadn't even said it. He'd just fabricate lies or make up stories to motivate himself and his teammates. So maybe Carlos Sainz just needs to call him up.
Yeah. Or just watch The Last Dance on repeat. And then, exactly. It was like, I took that personally, and like watching like iPad clips of stuff and laughing. I think that would be great for any team to do. Signing bonuses. You get to watch The Last Dance every day.
No. Real quick before we move on to different teams, we were kind of having a conversation amidst that about Mercedes. Laz, just realistically, what is the goal target for Mercedes this weekend after what's been, I think, pretty disappointing start to the season?
Understand the car. Figure out where that missing downforce is, kind of how it's been portrayed, is, because the simulation is saying one thing. It's saying if you run the car at X ride height, you will get Y amount of downforce, and they're not finding that Y amount of downforce, and they're encountering problems with the car bouncing up and down again at the X ride height, which really shouldn't be the case. It really shouldn't be the case by now. So many other teams have either dealt with it or found ways of living with it when it does appear. For them, it's understanding why this car isn't doing what they expect it to do. There have been flashes of times during practice sessions, maybe when the track temperature is right, or maybe when the wind conditions are creating nasty crosswinds and stuff like that, where the car has been incredibly quick. So it looks like there is some performance in there, but they've got to understand how to extract it in all conditions. And then the result will follow. Because once they've understand that and they can access the full performance of the car, probably it is good enough to join that fight behind Red Bull more consistently, or certainly we're giving the drivers something a little bit better to play with. Let's not forget, first race, George Russell was in top three in qualifying, and you know, car looked competitive until it had that overheating issue. So it feels like there's something in there. However, this circuit, I think if you're going to look at one team outside of Red Bull and Ferrari, who appear to be the two best so far, it's McLaren, and whether McLaren can actually get ahead of Ferrari, because Suzuka, one of the reasons we love the circuit is that it's got so many high-speed corners, and we know already from last year, but also from the early indications this year, that McLaren is still very, very quick in high-speed corners. And of course, this was a race last year where they went very well, had two cars on the podium. So I feel like that is maybe not two cars on the podium is possible, but certainly McLaren being Red Bull's closest rivals, or giving Ferrari a really good run for their money, is very possible this year. This weekend. And therefore, where Mercedes fits into that makes it even more difficult, because if they still don't understand the car and they're still experiencing the problems, most of which, by the way, have been happening in high-speed corners, then they're going to be struggling to break into the top six. But you could look at it another way and say, look, if you've got these problems, you've got to address them. So where better to do it than a track with lots of high-speed corners where you can run different experiments in practice? They'll probably be hoping that it's not raining as it is right now. We're not too far away from Suzuka, but I think it's raining in Suzuka as well today. They'll be hoping that they get some dry weather just to get a better handle of that car.
Remind me, is this the twisted sister or evil sister, or are we actually on to an evil triplet at this point?
Well, I think that very question was asked to Lewis, and he said that it's not the case. So this is the weird thing about this car, is that it's not giving the drivers some of the headaches they had before. Some of the things which Mercedes set out to solve over the year, over the winter, they have done, but they just can't access the performance. And there's a few just strange things it's doing. So it's, yeah, I don't know how to best describe whether it's evil, twisted, but it just seems very capricious, this car. You know, it's not something that will be capricious, this stuff. It's not something that will do exactly as it's told, and it's quite unpredictable, I think, for them at times.
That's a good word, a better connotation, I think, behind that. And I'm glad you mentioned McLaren, because I'm going to push this a step further. Lando secured his 14th podium in Australia, the most in F1 history without a race win. Nate Saunders.
Dave George.
This weekend finally be the day that he does it.
Well, this will speak volumes to the point we were making earlier about teams have to be putting Red Bull under pressure. And I think that Lawrence is absolutely right. This is a track where McLaren should be super strong. So everything has to be top level for Lando. You know, we saw a few times last year, Qatar stood out, you know, when he didn't get qualifying right. And I think he felt that he could have won at the very least the sprint, which Piastri won, but maybe even the race itself, you know, if he put himself into a better position. I think in Abu Dhabi as well, he felt similar, that maybe, you know, he wasn't saying he definitely would have won, but he felt that a win probably slipped away from him on Saturday. I think there's no reason, after seeing what Sainz was able to do in Melbourne, you know, I still think Max is overwhelming favorite going to most races, but you've just got to put yourself in that position. And I wrote at the start of the season, you know, I did a thing on one reason to root for every driver this year. The biggest storyline hanging over Lando is that win currently. You know, he's super, super talented. You know, he's an absolute superstar in his own right already. And yeah, he hasn't won that race. And I think that, you know, we all know how it is in any sport. You know, the longer a drought like that goes on, whether it's your first race win, your first Super Bowl, your first Premier League title. I mean, you know, Lawrence and I, we're going to be watching England play at the European Championships this year. England's captain, Harry Kane, has never won a championship trophy, and it's all anybody talks about. You know, he's such a great player, one of the best players in the world. Yeah, he's not won anything. You know, there's certain players that have won a bunch of things he hasn't. And that
he's
starts
the Charles Barkley of the NBA.
Yeah, exactly. Or like the Dan Marino, you know, and those things are always held over drivers like that. Now, it's still early enough in Lando's career that it's not that much of an issue. If he can win soon, you're like, okay, great. That was the thing for a little bit. But it does start to linger. And especially if McLaren gets to a stage when they have a championship winning car, if he's still got that to get rid of, it's a lot of pressure on him. I don't think this is a situation where we can say Lando's going to win this weekend if he gets everything right. But, you know, Lawrence made the point earlier, you've got to be putting Red Bull under pressure. You've got to be kind of testing how complacent that team's got out in front. And if there is an issue, Lando has to make sure he's the guy in second, you know, ahead of Perez even. Because I think Perez is the beatable Red Bull in any condition. You know, you can get your car ahead of that with, you know, if strategy's better, if you qualify better, etc. And yeah, the other thing with Lando that I think there's a similar, maybe a similar dynamic in play to what they have at Ferrari. We have seen that on occasions when there's been good results, like Qatar last year really stands out, that Lando didn't quite get the result and Oscar did. Now, that's unfair on Lando because he outperformed Oscar Piastri across the season last year. But what Lando doesn't want to start happening is when, you know, when these opportunities present themselves, he has to make sure he's the guy, you know, who's ready to capitalize on them. Pretty much every indication we have is that at the moment he's at a better level to Piastri. But I think Piastri's so quick and so, you know, is in his own right so good. I think that if Piastri was to win that race before Norris, that would be a massive, massive blow to Norris's kind of confidence and ego, etc. But yeah, he's definitely ready to win one. I just think expectations need to be kept in check for McLaren, because even though they're going to be strong this weekend, if Max stays in the race, it's difficult to see anybody challenging him in raw pace. I might be wrong. I hope I'm wrong, because we all like to see a close fight. But Norris is definitely a guy who should be coming into this weekend thinking second has to be the absolute, you know, minimum expectation. And then if Max does have issues, or if Max is, you know, the door does open to beat Max, you're right there. And I think anything less than that for Lando would be disappointing, because I think the car is quick enough to be on that podium for sure.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Worth mentioning, Yuki Tsunoda will compete in his home Grand Prix, which is always, I think, extremely exciting for drivers. He has outperformed certainly his teammate Daniel Ricciardo so far this season, Laz. What just impressed you about his start and the way that he's kind of handled himself? I know they had that, obviously, the dust up on the radio comms earlier on in the season, but he's looked good.
Well, even that, it seemed like he took the lesson, learned it, and then he was almost proud of himself when he was talking to journalists in Australia about how in Saudi Arabia, you know, despite a very frustrating race, he hadn't let loose on the radio. So, yeah, what more can you ask than that? And of course, what he did after the race with the car was completely unacceptable in Bahrain, where he, you know, kind of dive-bombed Daniel Ricciardo after the checkered flag and then, you know, nearly cut across him again. And so, like, that kind of stuff absolutely has to stop. But I think he's very aware of that, and it would be such a shame if the career of a guy who's clearly pretty talented doesn't go any further because people just think that, you know, he can't keep his head in the most stressful moments. But I think, yeah, if he can address that throughout the season, then that would be another thing where he can show, look, I've learned, I've progressed. But other than that, you know, I think last year he was very impressive. I think I put him in our top 10 drivers because I felt that no matter who his teammate was, and he had three, it didn't seem to change at all, you know, his performance. He was very, very good. And I think we have seen a driver progress a huge amount since he came into F1 in 2021. And I don't really know what more you can ask for from someone yet. The shame, or the sad thing is that he doesn't really get included in many conversations in the drive market about where he could go next. So I think Yuki's doing all the right things. And look, clearly, it's hard to know with Daniel exactly where he's at, whether, you know, this is Daniel's level or whether there's still issues with the car or, you know, things he doesn't like about the car, like there were at McLaren, where we always felt that Daniel was way underperforming compared to what we knew he could do. But now I think the excuses will start to run out. I don't want to write off Daniel just yet, but if this continues for another five or six races, this, you know, clear performance divide between the two of them and Yuki being able to get it into Q3 while Daniel makes a mistake in Q1 like he did in Australia and fails to get through to Q2, if stuff like that continues to happen, then I think it's going to become a fairly serious situation for Daniel. But I think it all shows well on Yuki, and I really think he's a driver performing at a very high level. Certainly, what he's capable of, I think he's he's maximizing what he's got, and I hope that's enough to ensure that his career goes beyond RB or continues at RB. Just lands him in a position where he's able to maybe show what he can do against other drivers and really prove exactly how talented he is.
For all of our Logan Sargeant diehards out there, we'd like to tell you that his car is back. He will be driving at least for the first day.
Until Alex crashes again, maybe.
There's no spare chassis, correct? So nope. Does that add pressure to these two drivers, knowing that there's no backup other than maybe taking their teammate's car?
It does, yeah, because we've seen that the decision is clear that they have to, it's a weird one, isn't it? Because there's always been pressure on Sargeant, just given the situation he's in there. I think there's still pressure on Albon, like he doesn't want to crash again. But I think Albon knows. I think even if Albon crashed the car again, I'm pretty sure they would make the same decision.
Do it again?
I think they would, and I think that Australia proved why as well. Like, I know he didn't get points, but I don't think Logan Sargeant would have been in 11th at the end of the race. He was pushing the Haas drivers. We obviously saw, George crash on the final lap. Alonso had a penalty. Now it didn't bring Williams into play, but it just shows you that, if it finished a bit lower and had that penalty, you never know what you're going to gain at the end of the race. So I think James Vowles has made it pretty clear what the call there is going to be. The thing with this call that I just didn't quite get, if just quickly get into it, was if you're making, and maybe it speaks to the lack of options that there were, but if you're making the decision at the end of last year to keep Logan Sargeant in the car, if this situation presents itself and you're like, nope, we're going to put the other guy in the car because he's just the better driver, it almost begs the question, why did you re-sign Logan Sargeant? Now, you're never going to have a driver lineup where you have both drivers on an equal pairing, but you'd like to think that you can always find a driver who, in a situation like that, you're like, all right, well, Alex is out of the race because he crashed. This other guy is more than capable of getting points himself. Sure. And yet Williams seem to put themselves in this position where they don't think Logan's capable of scoring points in those situations. His career proves that is kind of the case to this point. He's got one, and he got that one point. I forget where it was, but that was a post-race penalty, again, showing that if you finish 11th, you can end up moving up post-race. But yeah, it's just weird. It's weird they let that happen. And I think, they've probably crushed Logan's confidence now. That's the biggest thing with him. So I think the pressure's not so much on him in terms of don't crash this car. The pressure's on him now because I think everybody in Formula One, if you look at what they did last week, nothing's impossible in Formula One, but it's very unlikely you would think that Sargeant stays in that car next year, given the fact they've made that call already. It just doesn't scream we're super confident in this driver's underlying ability to score points or score big results when needed. So that's kind of where that situation is. But also, and we were talking about this, Lawrence and myself, when we were in Australia, completely crazy that Williams are at this point of the season without spares. I mean, that really is kind of alarm bell. There's a lot of changes that James Vowles is trying to implement, and it feels like he's dragging a team that's been a long way behind the rest in terms of infrastructure, in terms of the way that they've been doing a lot of things behind the scenes, and trying to drag them into the modern the modern landscape of F1. He's obviously come from Mercedes. He knows how a top team operates. But the fact they're so far behind at this point in the year is really worrying. So I think pressure just generally in that team at the moment, I think they'll be walking on eggshells all weekend.
Well, I saved the hard-hitting stuff for last. This question is important. If you could meet any driver's grandmother, who would it be, Laz? I'll start with you.
Well, I think it'd be after Alex Albon's, after what we saw on social media, right? I mean, she looks lovely.
How wholesome. If you didn't see it, they met in which airport? Narita,
yeah. That's right.
Narita, yeah. So Alex Albon's grandmother went up to Lando Norris and got a selfie with him. And then I think she was nervous that Lando wouldn't believe that she was actually, in fact, Alex Albon's grandmother. So she texted Alex the picture and she said, achieve one of my dreams. She's getting a picture with Lando. And then she said, make sure you let Lando know that I'm actually your grandmother and not someone just claiming to be, which I think is hilarious.
That's hilarious. And the funny thing with that as well, the thing that's really sweet is that Lando has said previously when he was a kid. So Alex Albon, as a as a karting driver, was an absolute phenom. He was, you know, he was incredible at that, you know, at a young age, and is a few years older than Lando. But Lando at one point had a poster of Alex Albon on his wall as when he was karting, because he had, you know, obviously you had guys like Lewis and Schumacher, etc., in the Formula One space. But the karter that he wanted to be was Alex Albon. So yeah, it's kind of nice how, you know, after all that time, Alex Albon's grandma is now kind of, is stanning, that's the right word that the kids use now, after a selfie with Lando now. I thought it was quite nice.
I'd throw Yuki's grandmother up there. I'd like to meet Yuki's grandmother.
Yeah, I've got a completely left field one. Fernando Alonso's grandma, I'd love to meet.
She's got to be feisty, right?
Yes. And there's a great story from years and years ago where Fernando Alonso got a penalty at the 2006 Italian Grand Prix. This is getting super, super technical and nerdy now, but it's just research I've been doing recently for a bunch of different things. And he stormed into the office of Charlie Whiting, who was the race director at the time, to complain. And he was apparently stomping around. And Charlie Whiting's memory of it was that Alonso kept hitting his table and saying, Charlie, what am I going to tell my grandma? She watches every race. She's my biggest fan. What am I going to tell her? And so I could just imagine Fernando Alonso's feistiness, but in this sweet old Spanish lady watching every Formula One race.
I love it.
So I think
a good one.
Her in there as well. Yeah.
Laz, are you going with Alex Albon, or did you just do that to segue us into the tweet?
He's such a pro. He segued.
I feel like I can't then reject Alex Albon's grandmother after saying
you
that.
Can't.
The first. Oh, actually, no. I'd rather meet someone else. So no,
I'll give
I'm
you a second
Alex
pick.
Albon's grandmother.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough.
I think it's so sweet. It's so sweet that she was like, Please let Lando know that it is me. I think that's like the most adorable thing I've ever heard.
I know. And her text to Alex, like how I text people, boom, 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 like three or four in a row. And then you get a little self-conscious about it. Grandmas don't need to be self-conscious about that. They can do whatever they want. Time for podium predictions. Now that you've picked grandmothers, you've got to pick three drivers to sit atop your podium in Suzuka. Laz currently leads with 5 points for correctly suggesting or picking Charles Leclerc to finish second in Australia. Katie is in second with 3 points, and Nate is a close third with 2 points. So I'm going to do a snake, or not even a snake. I'm just going to go from the bottom up.
Oh,
Nathaniel, you get to pick your top three.
So I'm going to say Max to win, and then Norris, Piastri.
Okay, so was that a repeat of exactly what happened last year?
Exactly the same.
I was Lando Piastri, correct?
Lando Piastri. I was thinking about maybe putting McLaren in first, but I'm in a position where I can't be making those gambles. Yeah. I've got to play it safe. I've lost ground early in the year. I've got to be boring. I've got to be vanilla.
Only Lawrence can get high on gambling.
I'm trying to
Us
goad Lawrence into
we have
don't,
to play,
don't try and tempt me
again.
Into a bad
I'm trying to goad Lawrence into saying that Max isn't going to win again. I'm trying to get him to make some obvious stumbles at this point.
Okay. I'm going Max Verstappen, Carlos Sainz, followed by Lando Norris.
Nice.
I'm putting a Ferrari between your pick, Nate. All right, Laz, what say you?
I'm going Max Verstappen.
Mm-hmm.
Boring, I know. Lando Norris, Charles Leclerc.
Ooh.
Nice.
Oh, God, poor Sergio Perez this weekend. No love.
I think it's going to be a wet race. And, you know, we talked about this last time, didn't we? How we should have more faith in Checo after the first two performances and finishing second at the first two races. But then in Australia, you know, kind of slipped back into old Checo. So, I think this track, you know, you've got to be so super confident. And it was the case last year that Checo was losing a huge amount of time in the first sector alone to Max Verstappen because he didn't have the confidence in the car. So, yeah, I'm not 100% certain that he's quite there yet, but it would be a really interesting interesting way of gauging his performance this year to see, again, that for those first sector times, how far off he is from Max, whether he can get close. And, yeah, I think if he's close there, then maybe I'll start to add him to a few top three predictions later in the year.
I'd just like to distinguish when you say old Checo, do you mean like really good Checo? Or when you say old Checo, you mean like that bumpy kind of middle part of last season?
I mean the bumpy period of last year and the new Checo being the fairly slick couple of results he got at the first two races. And I think in Australia, you know, clearly the Red Bull wasn't as competitive as it had been, but clearly it was still a very competitive car. I feel like he should have done better.
Just wanted the fans to know exactly what we were talking, what era of Checo we were referring to. Okay, so you guys head to Suzuka. It's Wednesday morning right now.
Correct.
Where you at? You're heading to Suzuka Thursday morning, correct?
Yep.
And do you take a bullet train, or is that just a false name that they put on a Brad Pitt movie?
No, it's a real, no, we it's do. A real
well,
thing.
Well, it's, I guess it's known as the bullet train, but it's Shinkansen is what it's called here. And yeah, it's the fast train that we'll get for, I think, maybe just like one or two stops, maybe just one stop to Nagoya, which is north of Suzuka. And then we have to get the Kintetsu line. It's my train nerdery of Japan coming through. And that takes us down to Shiroko, where we then all pile on a bus and go straight to Suzuka.
Spot the guy who's been going to Japan for 10 years. I still can't say Shinkansen.
If Lawrence wasn't there, would you be able to do this? If Lawrence wasn't there and you weren't there to kind of follow him around, would you be able to navigate this?
I think I might have just about made it to Hiroshima and then Kyoto. I think that honestly, having Lawrence and having, we've had Chris Medlin with us as well, has been a big help, because especially when we arrived at the airport from Melbourne, just sorting out the train to get from Narita Airport into Tokyo, I was completely lost. I was kind of baffled by everything, and you know, so yeah, that I might still be at that airport if I hadn't been with Lawrence. But yeah, he's just demonstrated why. Great knowledge. And including where to eat as well. Lawrence is very good at, you know, knowing good places to eat, especially in Tokyo.
Well, we're very jealous, but glad that we get to live vicariously through the both of you. Safe travels, enjoy the trip, and we can't wait to hear what you guys thought on the ground after Suzuka wraps up this weekend. As always, thanks both for your time, your analysis, enjoy your day, and cheers, guys. We'll see you next week for another episode of Unlapped.